Welcome to another episode of the Pink Glasses Convo. My name is Olaoluwa, and I'm so grateful to everyone who listens, to everyone who shares about PGC, who kind of spreads the word. I think I need to do a better job of like encouraging people to spread the word better and follow PGC, like Pink Glasses Convo, on whatever streaming platform that you use. I think like some of the major ones are like Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and of course Amazon Music as well, or Amazon Podcast. I don't know if they have a specific app for their podcast, but wherever you listen, please, you know, follow and share. And you know, if you have topic ideas, or if there's a specific topic that we touched on and you're like, I want you to kind of say that again, you know, feel free to let us know, feel free to let me know. And we will definitely do our best. If there's someone or someone in a particular field that you want us to feature, just let us know, you know, we'd love. And we'll try to find someone in that specific realm, to feature. So anyways, today's episode, I am going to be talking about, I'm not featuring a guest today. Today's a solo episode. And so I am going to be talking about my experience as an only child. And I think I say it often, but then a lot of people are like, no you don't. I'm like, okay, sorry. We're just gonna be talking about like my chronicles as an only child, and some of the good, the bad, the ugly that I don't think we talk about. We talk about last borns a lot, but we don't talk about only child. Oh no, an only child. So anyways, sit back and relax and just laugh at my story. It's totally fine. I'll see you the other side. So, I don't even know where to start with my story because, your baby girl suffered in this life, y'all. I think like I can start by sharing probably why I'm an only child. That's if I know, but so my mom waited for 19-ish years, about 20 years before having me. And it wasn't like she intentionally was like, oh my God, I'm just gonna wait to have my daughter or to have a child. She was actively waiting. And by actively waiting, what I mean is like she was expectant and, you know, really wanted it and tried. And at least that's what I heard. I'm talking like I was there. But, you know, she tried. She was really trying. And, you know, God just wasn't like, it's not. God was like, it's not time. Until she had me, and I've heard stories for days, you know, about when my mom got pregnant of me, and I think like how the family was and all the things that happened. And I don't know if it's a myth about, you know, like somebody in my family who sat down on the toilet seat and then the toilet seat broke while she sat on it at my naming ceremony because they thought she wanted to do something evil. I mean, anyways, well, if that's the case, Holy Ghost fire, you know. But that's kind of like leading up to my story. I mean, I'll probably have share a little bit more about that. But so leading up to that, so I was the only child, and I think my mom wanted more, but God just said no. And fun fact, which she told me, was that she wanted a male child, right? Because it's African culture where like the male child is always seen as superior to a female child, because the male child is the one that carries on the family name and the family legacy. And so she wanted a male child just so that she wanted, you know, she'll have someone to carry the name. And maybe even if it was just one, people would see her as like, finally she had the best of the two options. But God was like, What do you mean? I have a baby girl for you. Come on. And so she had me. And I think she tried after that, but you know, God said no, like I said. And so fast forward, my mom comes from a very big family. She's the first of, I don't know if I should cast her, but she's the first of a lot of kids. I've probably told some people the story of how many kids that my grandpa has, because he's Muslim. My mom comes from a Muslim background, and you know, she went to a Christian school, and that's where she kind of transitioned and became a Christian and kind of was in and out. And while she was waiting and all of that, she told God of like, y'all are probably going to hear this story again, but she told God of like, hey, if you give me a child, you know, like if you're a student of the Bible, kind of like that Hannah experience, right? Like, if you give me a child, I'll, you know, give the child back to you. But instead, my mom did something really nice. She gave herself, which is okay. I mean, it would have been fine if it was me. I don't know. But so, you know, she was like, I will, you know, give my life and kind of like serve you full time. And so that's kind of like what my mom did and has been doing ever since I was born, is that she has been a preacher of the word of God all my life. That's all I've known my mom to do. A preacher and a teacher. And I mean, it's impossible for me to talk about my story and my experience as an only child without talking about my mom. So I promise this is not an episode for my mom, but just a little bit of background about how I became a PK and all of that. And so she, you know, she made that covenant and that promise to God of like, you know, I'll be a preacher. And that's what she's done ever since. And so to kind of back things up a little bit, because you know, she comes from a big family, and the big families, because my grandpa was Muslim of blessed memory, you know, we always had people in the house. That's where I'm going. I always had uncles. If you listen to episodes a lot, you hear me say my big brother, my big sister, my auntie, my uncle. We always had people in the house because it was a big family. And so someone was visiting from a different state, you know, someone was checking in, someone's child was always living with us, and my auntie, my cousins, you know, I had two male cousins then, who lived with us for a long time and honestly are my brothers. I don't even see them as cousins. And then I had like my other, like, I mean, we always had people around me growing up. So if you see me in that state, if you see me on a regular day, you might not think I'm an only child because I had people around in the house. We had like, not as like, house helps or anything like this, were like family, right? The ones that will tell you to go wash your plate or go take care of something or go do something for them. And so that made it interesting, but it still didn't remove from the fact that I was an only child, right? So my dad was and will always be a G, and so you know, he was my person, and he was always in my corner, of course. And so of course my mom was in ministry and was kind of more out there and kind of doing more of that, and it still was hard. You know, you think that you have people and you have people around, but the reality dawns on you, you know. And I think that I say all of that background to kind of talk about the reality of that, the reality of being an only child. And I'll probably sprinkle a little bit of like the reality of being a pastor's kid as well, and growing up with those societal or religious ideals, right? Everyone expected you as a PK to be the best kid, to be the one who knows the scripture, who's able to teach her peers, who was of the highest moral standard, of the highest spiritual standard, should be able to pray for hours. You know, if everybody is shouting as a PK, you should be quiet. You know, you should just, there's just this platform that they put you on. It's either that platform or they completely expect you to be of this world. You know, there's this myth about pastor's kids becoming bad boys and bad girls, right? So, which we all have a hand to play in how pastor's kid turn out, because how many of us really pray for our pastor's kids or our pastor's family? Some of us can call our pastors and our, you know, shepherds and all of that at any time of the day, and we're expecting them to answer us at any time, but we don't think about the impact of that on their family, right? We don't think of the impact of that on their familial dynamics or their family relationships. We just expect them to answer us at our beck and call. And so when their children don't fit into your box and norm, you're like, a total PK, you know, just becoming the bad boy. So yeah, and I think one of the pros, no, I'm gonna probably start with the cons. I think it makes you very self-dependent, because you're your biggest cheerleader and you are your biggest friend, right? You kind of feel like there's no one else in your corner. I always wonder what it felt like to have like siblings, because I always hear my friends that have siblings, and it feels like there's this sibling rivalry that's always going on, and they're constantly fighting, and they're constantly like, and I'm like, wow, I'm envious that you even have somebody to fight with, you know. And so that's definitely one of the major cons, is that you definitely kind of feel alone. You feel like you have to think about it yourself. You have to deal with it yourself. You have to work through it yourself. You know, there's no sibling or anybody else that isn't your parent looking out for you, right? And so for me, it made it interesting because my parents were older. I mean, I'm seeing an average female wait 20 years to have a kid. That if you get married at 25 and you wait 20 years, I mean, I don't know when my mom got married, but if you wait 25, if you're 25, right, which is the marriageable age, quote unquote, for females, at least in Nigeria, and you wait 20 years, you're going to be 45, right? So let's imagine my mom is 25, waited 20 years, had me at 45. And so by the time I'm like 15, she already... she's already like what, 4 or 5, she was already 60, right? Which I think was what happened with me, is like, she's already 60. No, yeah, that's what happened with me. So they're older, they're like what, 4 generations above of you. I mean, like, there are times when I remember my mom would come to school or come to my secondary school, which my mom did not used to go for all these PTA meetings and all of that. It wasn't her thing. She's the kindest and the sweetest, but she just has a different type of temperament. As a firstborn girl in a big family, it kind of makes sense, right? And then, you know, just kind of being older, there's just some things they didn't get, not because they're in good parents, but because they were of a different generation, right? And so the sense is like, my mom will maybe come to school for something, and I remember then like some classmates would be like, is that your grandma? I remember this one was in primary school, because my mom was probably much older than all the moms there, you know, and people be like, is that your grandma? And I'm like, no, that's my mom. And, you know, typical I mean, think of elementary school drama, think of middle school drama, at least even in the US, and it's like, you're like, everybody keeps calling my mom my grandma, which, you know, could make you feel a certain type of way. But that in itself, also being added to the mix as an only child, definitely kind of makes you feel like you have to deal with things on your own. And then when you add the reality of being a PK, and there's this societal standard on you to be perfect and to not be wanting in any space, capacity, or time, you get to be a person who wants perfection and control, and struggles with vulnerability, because you just haven't grown up to have this space to be, you know. I think one of the pros for sure is that, like, you get to eat all the food, nobody's fighting, there's no competition nowhere anywhere, it's you for you, by you, by yourself, life's good. You know, if my mom, at least like we have people around, but you're just saying things that I just think that like nobody's fighting me. There is no pressure. It's not going anywhere. The problem with that though is if you have a mama like mine, she's going to help you store those things forever. I mean, I remember being back home in Nigeria and my mom started bringing out all these things. I mean, this was less than a year ago. And like, I mean, like necklaces and clothes. And I'm like, I remember when somebody had to give me this cloth, or when you bought this cloth and you kept it of like, you wear it at some point in life. That's so in your own interpretation, mama, you're at some point in life is like 8 years later. Amazing. I don't need it. Like, what do you want me to do with it? One, it's probably not gonna size my body. Two, it's probably not gonna fit my style. Not because I wear a particular style. I mean, think of the clothes you wore when you were in secondary school. Like, think of the clothes you wore 8 years ago when your mom is like, I found this thing though when I was cleaning my wardrobe. I hope you still like it. And I'm like, no, don't hope I still like it. I don't, there's no hoping. This is not faith. This is not Jesus. I'm not hoping anything. I don't like it, you know. But if you don't have a mom like mine who keeps everything, you definitely get to enjoy. You just, there's no bad blood, you know, which I kind of feel happens when you have siblings. And all of that is just like, there's somebody else, you kind of like, am I the favorite child? I've heard stories of like being the favorite child or not. That doesn't happen if you're an only child. So, and I think I'm thinking a lot because this is a very like very laid back episode if you haven't figured it out. But there's this myth that if you're an only child, you're very, very spoiled. Like, you're giving everything you want, you get access to anything, your parents answer you at your beck and call, you know, you live the soft life, you live the baby girl life, which could be, you know, I think depending on the moral and the values in the family that you are, you know, it depends on the type of parents that you have as well, if they're the kind of parent who... they're like, I've gone through this, you know, you cannot. Hey, have you met my mother? No. Got it. If you've met my mother in any capacity, you would know that wasn't my story. Let me just give a disclaimer that no child abuse was involved because I'm a social worker before I'm asked to go and report my mom. You know, this is African culture, which again, please, there's a whole difference between child discipline and child abuse. Like, let's just put that on the table. Let's place it there. Let's deal with it. Let's kind of deal with the elephant in the room. There's a whole lot of difference. I'm never going to encourage child abuse in any way. And I think certain things also exist in certain cultures that like probably should be looked into. But it also helped shape some of us. I would just be honest. This is my background. This is my story. And the story of a lot of people, you know, that are Nigerians, right? And so there was no space to be spoiled in my mother's household. There was no, as in, you couldn't stretch it, because shout out to all the big sisters that helped train me, you know, that was there when I was a baby, that would carry me while I was a baby until, you know, I became a toddler, that would care for me back at church and make sure I'm okay and fed me when my mom was kind of doing the work of the Lord. I'm so grateful to you all. And I've heard stories of how, like, my mom back in the day, not because she, I'm not saying my mom is not a wicked person, no, please, though, she's not somebody to run away from. And this is pre-Jesus. Now, my mom is in her post-Jesus state. This is her pre-Jesus state, right? I've heard stories from my aunties where, like, my mom is the firstborn, and so, like, if my mom got home back then when all of them were much younger, you would think it's my grandpa coming. Everybody to your tent, or Israel, everybody would disperse because my mom has come. But post Jesus is still there, but it's not that much. My cousin and I know, would always say that my mom had a chair in the living room called the judgment seat. If you come back from school, come back from outside, come back from church, come back from wherever, and my mother is sitting, and she's sitting on that seat, begin to pray the Lord's Prayer. Just ask God for forgiveness of sin. Ask God to help you in any way you have wronged Him. If God likes you and you have this space, ask God to enter my mother's heart on your behalf. Because that judgment seat is a testament that you have done something. She'll let you sit down. She'll let you... There's a word she used to say. If she calls you, and I'll interpret this. If she calls you... If she says Arabian, which means female, like you're calling to a female person, or it's just Arakun, like male, you know, like this man or this boy or this male person, and she calls you to her presence, or she says madam, God, let me just end it there. I mean, there was no space to be spoilt with my mom. My mom was a person of value. She would always say that she would be answerable to God if I wasn't well trained. And I'm not, this is a, please, I'm going to say, like, this is not in any way to sound like, oh, I'm such a well trained girl. Like, that's not the point. It's just to talk about, I'm just talking about my experience as an only child, how it could be similar or, you know, maybe even different to other people. And I always tell her that, like, yes, I appreciate the values that you instilled, but it takes God to help a man be. It takes God to. I didn't make the right decisions. I was a pin in our face, you know. I didn't make the right decisions every time. I didn't walk the right path every time. But she never for once said that, like, because this is my only daughter, you know, I have to let her be. God would understand, you know. And you might not be an only child, but there might be something that God has given you that you have waited for so long. It might be a business, it might be a job, it might be an experience, it might be marriage or relationship, it could be finally being able to migrate, it could be anything that you have waited for so long. You have faced failure on so many counts, and you're like, finally, this thing is in my hand. Please don't forget that it is God that has given you, and the fact that He has given you, it doesn't mean that He should take it away from you. It doesn't mean that thing should take you, rather, away from God, right? It should actually, whatever it is, draw you closer to God. Does that make sense? And so that's how I can best relate, you know, the experience of being an only child, of like, you finally have this thing, or you finally moved, I'm finally done, I'm not gonna pray to God again, I'm not gonna build my relationship, but I've waited for has landed, has come to pass. Oh yeah, God, see you later, peace out. No, it shouldn't be. It's easy, though. It's easy to fall into that trap of like, it's over, it's done, I have what I have. Even if not intentionally, now, subconscious, we just get to move on a lot as humans, don't we? You know, we pray and fast for things for years, we get it, and if you are nice, 2 minutes later something happens and you're back to like, oh yeah, God, I hand this thing. Sometimes we don't even come back, right? I think about the 10 lepers. Is that, you know, I don't know how long they had been lepers for, if they were born with it, you know, but the moral of the story is that, like, they were healed, right? Christ healed them, and that was it. 9 out of 10, that's 90% of them were like, okay, I'm healed, peace out, thank you Jesus, I would hear about your messages later. Only one person came back to say thank you. Only one person stopped in that moment to say, no, you did something in my life. Thank you, I am grateful. You know, and so I'm grateful to my mom that, you know, she never let me separate her from God, if that makes sense. I think more and more she dropped me in the church. I always say I grew up in the church, right? Even though she didn't own a church or pastor a church. Our denomination doesn't let women pastor or lead churches. But she was in the gospel team, and she was constantly having meetings. Or she was leading Bible study, a Bible school, and she was teaching a Bible school, and she was always doing something for God. And so I grew up with that. Now we go first. We will be the first person at church. We'll be the last person to leave. The days of collecting, going upstairs to get collect 100 naira for my mom at the gospel team meeting room, you know, waiting for her. And I'm like, gosh, I'm so hungry. And waiting, I mean, then primary school, secondary school. And then by the time I got to college, I started joining, by the help of God, I started now being in some meetings, right? I was in committees. I was, you know, prepping for youth week and youth programs, and later on church programs. And then it flipped, you know, which is really interesting for a lot of people to see, especially the people who saw me growing up, is that now my mom started waiting for me, you know, and she'd be like, please go and help me call Olaoluwa, and they'll be like, they come here. I'm like, no, tell her I'm busy with the Lord's work. She's the one that made me like this, so she gotta deal with it, of course, respectfully. And so I am grateful, and I don't think there's nobody that God cannot work with, depending on the family issue. If you're not a picky and you're like, what kind of episode is this? This one is not for me. Or if you're not an only child, rather, and you're like, this is not for me, I have siblings, I have this, I have that, whatever it is that is your family dynamic, whatever it is that makes your experience. I know we talk about being a last born, and kind of being pampered. People talk about the middle child syndrome and being the forgotten child, right? People talk about the firstborn being the sample child, right? Where parents' energy are the strongest, where you take the most discipline, where the parents are figuring things out. You know, there's a lot of social science research around family roles, social roles, and social dynamics, talking about when you are at the age of 40, I think it's midlife crisis. You know, because most of the time people at that age begin to lose parents, begin to experience grief more, they kind of get burnt out from their job. All of those things, all this research, which is great. You know, I'm a social scientist myself, and just to encourage you that you're bigger than social research. You know, you're a child of God. And so yes, we can acknowledge these experiences, and God can still turn things around for us, for our good. He can turn our experiences, whatever family dynamics. Maybe you actually never got to be in a family, or you never grew up with the mom, or you never grew up with the dad, or your family was filled with so much conflict, or so much abuse, or so much neglect. And you're just like, I can't relate to anything you're saying. I can't relate to what it means to have a mom. Or you lived with a grandparent and not with your own parent. Or you felt rejected by your parents or by a parent. I'm just here to encourage you that there's a bigger parent. I'm here to encourage you that you have Jesus, and he's with you and he's for you. And guess what? He will never leave you alone. And so keep trusting him, keep committing those experiences to him, and let him do his work. Let him make your life for good. He's a great God. So I've just always wanted to share honestly about my experience as a pastor's kid. So I hope you all get to listen to the end, and you're not just opening and you're like, which one is going to go of an only child? She, that one is a podcast. Please listen, you know, kind of, it helps you to know me better, right? And that's what Pink Glasses Conversation is about. It's about me sharing, you know, more from my identity and kind of being able to encourage people from that, you know. So anyways, I hope you all have a good listen. I hope you have a good rest of your day, rest of your week, rest of the month, whenever you get to watch or listen rather to this episode. Feel free to catch up on our other episodes, and always grateful to the PGC listeners. I will see you guys in a different episode. Take care of yourself. Bye.